America Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Here's Ward. Back to Pekka again. Pekka's shot deflected wide of the net. Ward kicks it free. Out in front. Never got his shot away. Back to Pekka. Pekka's shot scores! The captain does it again! The captain does it early in the second overtime period! Michael Pekka salts it away! And the Buffalo Sabres, undefeated in this series, take a stranglehold 3-0 lead!
Long before an amorphous blob was actually a thing to be talked about with NHL netminders, that was Pekka, Hasek, and the Sabres rolling against Montreal in 98 en route to a conference final trip. And by the way, Dominic had a 937 save percentage in that eventual sweep of the Canadiens. Tonight, Alex Lyon looks to continue his fine play in Game 2 for Buffalo.
So, I don't know what an amorphous blob is. I know that Hasek had a slinky for a spine, which
See?
I think it would be the same thing.
Something
like similar.
Yes.
Like, okay, so it works for me. And I think that, Alex Lyon saying that about himself really brought out the Yale University education that he got when he played college hockey. So way to go, Alex Lyon.
When does it not, though, with Alex?
I mean, it's always entertaining.
It's always entertaining, isn't it?
Yeah. The first time he got the sword in the locker room, mm-hmm. he starts swiving it around and staring at the camera. We knew he was going to be a character, and yesterday he didn't disappoint.
No, he did not. And tonight it is Game 2, Montreal and Buffalo here at KeyBank Center. We'll dive in an awful lot throughout the course of the show today, and obviously a big opportunity for the Sabres to take mm-hmm. a 2-0 series lead. Now, behind us is something you are going to see beginning in the 26-27 season, and that is a partnership with StarkTech and their logo on the Sabres jersey moving forward for road games. Marty, this is a company that's been headquartered in Williamsville.
Yes.
And StarkTech has been around the Sabres an awful long time, providing energy efficient technology solutions to schools, healthcare facilities, and of course here, sports venues across North America.
Yes, and you talk about, look, they've been a big partner and working on a new Highmark Stadium, the Bill Stadium. And they do big projects in power management, security, HVAC. We all know that here at KeyBank Center, they've been involved with, everything that has to do. Like, we talk about the ice and the air quality, humidity, and all of that. So they are a brand new partner for the away patch jersey, and it's going to be good to see that. And it's good to always have a local company to be able to, be involved with this team. And we know that the fans are involved, but a lot of the fans work locally and they support business locally. And this is another one that we're proud to be, partnering with.
You telling me I should get in touch with them to adjust the temperature just a little bit, given my chronic coldness?
Yeah, you should. And I love their logo and the color. It stands out really nice here on the jersey, obviously with the blue. We have it in back, but I wanted to show it a little bit better here.
You're all about the feel, and maybe you got a little more feel for everything this morning as far as the craziness, the appetite, the fan
yes.
base here in Buffalo getting an early start on a Friday morning heading into Game 2. Thanks to Good Morning America.
Now for our play of the day, and Rhiannon and Allie is in Buffalo with all the excitement around the Stanley Cup playoffs. Good morning, Rhiannon.
Hey, good morning, Michael. That's right. I am here surrounded by some of the most diehard Sabres fans you will ever find. There is no party like a Sabres party. Are you guys ready to cheer for your Sabres? Since Buffalo was in the Stanley Cup playoffs, the city is going berserk for their beloved Sabres. Buffalo has never won the Cup ever. Fans believe this could be the year. But first, they have to beat the Montreal Canadiens. Game 2 of the second round Eastern Conference Series is tonight here in Buffalo, and the momentum is with the Sabres after they flex their power play muscle to take Game 1 4-2. Fans are buzzing about the news that their captain, Rasmus Dahlin, has just been named a finalist for the Norris Trophy. That is given to the NHL's best defenseman, and they can't wait to toast him with one of these. Look at this, guys. This is the official Bills. This is the Beer Saber. We have coffee in ours because we got to keep our energy up. It's going to be a long night because we got a win tonight. I've sent some back to the studio for you. These were really hard to find.
Thank you, Billy.
Hundreds of dollars on the second market. Yes, these are full of coffee, guys. Oh. You ready for tonight? Let's go, Buffalo!
There's a coffee.
Yeah. Hey, look, I love coffee. I'd be scared to drink that one.
We have to share it.
Share that?
Because we also can't put it down anywhere, so you've got to just drink the whole thing.
In a white dress, I'm a little worried for you right now,
Ginger. You go first, Ginger.
That's a cool idea. I love that. Good luck to Buffalo. And coming up, Sam, you're getting ready for...
Marty, you were a part of it this morning. What was it like?
So you can't chug a coffee in a beer saver.
No.
You got to be very careful with that. Thanks to Rhiannon, which I wish you would have been there and would have been able to show her your ink on your knuckles. That would have been fantastic, obviously. But it was great. The fans were here bright and early. We got to go on the GMA3 show, which is their third hour. Rob Ray and I, we tested a few food items that are new to the playoffs, and fantastic experience. The fans were really energetic behind us, and we did have some fun. Although Razor was funny because she kept asking, like, how do I say your last name? And I'm like, it's Byron. And Razor was like, Byron. And then she's like, no, how do I say it? Byron. And he'd be like, Byron, 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 Byron. He was really trying to throw her off her game. So it felt like a locker room again, and it was great, and we had a lot of fun.
Well, this just in, the finalists for the Hart Trophy are out there, Kucherov, MacKinnon, and McDavid, so I don't actually care to listen to any of the voters moving forward for the rest of my career, or, you know.
I cannot wait until you see the ballot for all the voters, and we start circling where celebrity is.
All this proves is the writers, as I suspected, based on their travel, not because of their lack of ability to understand the game, but like you need to watch. And if you'd watch Celebrini as much as I watch Celebrini this year, and most people that watch Celebrini, he was the best player to improve a team the most, and he was clearly the greatest MVP to a team this year.
To anyway, your point,
that's my
Duffer,
take.
To your point, and it's a great point, right? I was just talking to a couple of Montreal like reporters, and one of them says, "Oh, I had Dahlin in my top three." Like, a couple of times that we covered the games here in Buffalo and I saw Dahlin play, and one more time we had him on TV, and I'm like, you based that out of like three viewings, really? And obviously you catch some highlights and you catch some plays, but you know, the way that they were talking is, those three games that I watched, he was so dominant. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, like I get it. I'm all for Dahlin. I had to do a little thing on TSN last night talking about Evan Bouchard, and the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, that's crazy. Evan Bouchard was in the top three, but there's so many candidates. Mm-hmm. I think for the Hart, there was really four candidates. So it was more of a game of who do you leave off? Mm-hmm. MacKinnon, McDavid, Kucherov, or Celebrini out of the top three. Mm-hmm. The odds were saying Celebrini. The writers are saying Celebrini. You are not saying Celebrini, Duffer. And I don't know that I could have. Yesterday I said maybe McDavid is the one left off. Mm-hmm. Because I think Kucherov did a great job with Tampa. MacKinnon was dominant all year. And Celebrini with San Jose was fantastic. I would have been inclined to say McDavid is probably the one that I wouldn't vote for the Hart, but mm-hmm. that's a tough vote.
I would say this. I think it's a flawed process, you know, asking people to vote on these awards when it's not physically possible to actually view everything, at least at a measured level. There's a likelihood you're going to see this player, that player, another player more often based on your schedule, their availability on national TV or otherwise. And I think
if they're hurt, the game you're watching, you're not seeing them or whatnot.
Obviously become more complicated as time has gone on because of the number of teams, right? Like, now, television was not a great asset back in the day when there were six teams in the NHL or even 12 or even 21, quite frankly. But it was easier to get a feel for a limited number of players. You're talking about over 800 players in the, you know, that are regulars now in the NHL. So I just think,
and you played a lot more games against those teams back then. Like, there was 21 teams.
Correct.
There was 20 opponents.
But even then,
now you have 31 opponents, right?
Exactly,
right? So you don't you play three times against.
They're all
teams.
Worthy. Obviously, this is not a slandering of any of the finalists. It is merely
even the voters agree with what you're saying. We have Pierre LeBrun in here.
Yeah,
he's like, it's a tough process, but. Well, but he Darren Dreger yesterday talking about how from the Norris, for example, he'll call and talk to other Norris candidates.
That's another interesting thing. But again, it's a great approach, and I'm sure everybody does their research in a different way, right? But you're never going to be able to find a scientific way to actually do something like this. So anyway, it's fine. I'm all
Some
in on Macklin.
Some people want to add another defenseman award.
Oh, of course.
An offensive defenseman and a defensive defenseman. Mm-hmm. It would make it even more complicated.
Right.
Because there's some guys that can do both.
Well, they can wait till Slavin retires, and then they can have every national broadcaster, you know.
Well, he did save a goal on the goal line yesterday.
So did Brandon Hagel. It's not going to get him the Selke. Now, let's focus on tonight, obviously. Yes. Montreal-Buffalo game 2. Not expecting any changes either side?
No, not expecting any changes either side. It's kind of funny because the Sabres, in the off day yesterday, didn't have a skate. Only the extra skated. A full morning skate this morning. Montreal's doing the other way around. Mm-hmm. They had a full skate practice yesterday and only the extra this morning. So when you watch Montreal extras on the ice, Brendan Gallagher was on the ice. Jaden Struble was on the ice, so I don't expect any changes for Montreal. Dobesh was not on the ice. Fowler and Montembeau were there, so no changes for Montreal. I don't anticipate any changes for Buffalo either. They played the type of game they wanted to, and they know they have a couple more notches to go to. It wasn't like, man, the Sabres were 100% and Montreal was 50.
No.
I think they were both about 75-80%. They both feel like they got another step or two to give, but that this roster is what the Sabres are going with. So no Sam Carrick tonight, even though he's probably itching to get back into a game.
Well, they're the two youngest teams currently in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and obviously we've noted time and again throughout the entire regular season and now the similarities between the two, their core, their future hopes, and all the rest of it. And some of it was on display in Game 1 for sure,
yes,
as we saw Doan and Benson, who have taken an awful lot of the spotlight for the Sabres in recent games. Do you know that it's kind of crazy because, when you talk about small samples like a playoff series and the playoffs in general are, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about Buffalo's inability to score in the first period. Mm-hmm. They have now outscored their opponents 9-2 in first periods, and they are the number one team in first period goal differential. This has all transpired over the last four games, of course. And
first and third period have been really good.
That's the key. They're bookending this well,
yes,
and yet they had a decent second period against the Habs in Game 1. So all of it leads you to believe that I agree with your assessment. I think putting both teams' games at, let's say, 75% in Game 1 is pretty fair. And so if you're looking at it that way, who then on either side would be looked
the
upon
other
as more?
The
other 25%, like more. And again, you could easily start at the top. I understand that. But let's just focus on Buffalo. I mean, you've got some offensive guys that haven't been able to find the back of the net for a while. Thompson, Zucker, Quinn would be three of them.
It'd be good if it was all three.
Yeah.
I think that's the 20%. Now, it's funny. Remember after the game the other night when somebody mentioned to Jordan Greenway, you scored 3 goals in the morning skate? Did you know you were going to have that? And it was like, what? I scored 3? I've had games where morning skates where I've scored 8. But I'll tell you this. I was watching Tage Thompson at the morning skate today.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a morning skate. They go through the motions. A couple of times he's toe dragging through the middle, whatnot. Late in the morning skate, he had a play to the left flank, short side. He went under the post corner by the earlobe of Alex Lyon. It was like a patent Tage Thompson type of short side, like quick wrist shot. And then he celebrated after. He had to jump and to move. And I wrote it on. I'm like, oh, if there's a moment in the game tonight where Tage is taking a step forward,
mm-hmm,
like these are small things in the morning skate that could mean nothing. But I think there was a sense of joy and a sense of yes. Like, I talked about Jack Quinn hitting the post the other day 5 times in a row and kind of being like, man, can I get one in? And then in the game, he hit crossbar, he hit post again. I think Tage Thompson will have the impact game that we want, and that's part of the 25%. I think the Sabres can even be better with that line providing that offense.
Quinn is 0 for his last 7 games in the goal-scoring department with 19 shots and 50 shot attempts. Mm-hmm. The latter number is, I think, a real positive for him. When you average it out, that you're going over 7 shot attempts per game. It's exactly what he needs to do,
and
right?
And the location where he's shooting the puck. He's getting to the middle. He's finding the areas where he can beat goalies clean. Now, a guy like Jack Quinn, when he's getting the puck in the slot, his sights are, aim small, miss small, right? Mm-hmm. That's what he's looking at. And sometimes you end up hitting posts. You end up hitting just missing the net. And I think he's had a lot of these miss or these really close calls. Some guys like that better than hitting the goalie in the chest. Because it's like, well, what does it matter? If I hit the goalie in the chest, I'm making him feel good and I'm making myself feel bad.
No different than doing a spinorama or a between the leg shot. An attempt is an attempt is an attempt. And if you feel confident in it, who's to say whether you go forehand, backhand, or something else?
Well, I mean, you know, I was victimized by a between the leg shot by Tomas Hertl. And that was, you know, very well documented because nobody was trying that. And then since then, everybody's trying it.
Yep.
Somebody asked me yesterday, well, when did you see Zach Benson having this much confidence in his game? I'm like, go back and watch his first NHL goal.
Go back to his first training camp.
Absolutely.
His first preseason. How did he make the team as an 18-year-old?
Exactly.
Like, that's why.
But he didn't have 200 goals to say, I'm going to go between the legs. He had zero when he went between the legs and scored in Washington his first NHL goal.
And then this year he's able to produce as many assists as he had previously in points for a season, so he's emerged there. And as we were saying going into this, if you're looking at the other 20-25% that can have a major impact on the game, it leads us to our Sabres Live Twitter poll today, because you have to look at, as we just were, the Buffalo side of things. But if you're here in Buffalo and looking at the Canadiens and which players might worry you the most, because maybe they haven't been as hot. Obviously, Suzuki scored in consecutive games, but the options are Caulfield, Suzuki, Hudson, and Dobesh.
Yeah, and for me, it was Lane Hudson because I do feel that after, you know, a couple of misplays, a couple of, you know, falls, and he took a penalty early. I really look at, you know, Hudson. But when you look at some of the replies, like we saw Demidov, like he had a strong game in game one. Mm-hmm. Some people are saying, I'm worried about Demidov. Caulfield, obviously, is another name. So, you know what? I think this poll was great. Those four names are probably the biggest four names. But I do think if you had to look outside of those four, Demidov and the chances and the power play rotation, he could be a catalyst for the offense and maybe for the top line for Montreal to maybe get something going. Not that we want that. We want to keep him off the books.
What do you think? Because Lindy has obviously addressed this a number of times as far as his trust in his forwards, specifically when it comes to line matching or not line matching against other teams' top players. With the emergence, especially in the last few games, of Benson and Doan as kind of a power duo, if you will, what do you think it does from the opposition standpoint, in this case San Luis and the Canadiens, as far as an approach to a game and how they would check Buffalo? Based on the fact, presumably, you would never want to leave the Thompson line, quote-unquote, unmatched.
Yeah, so it's interesting because Marty St. Louis is very stubborn. And I know him, and that's the way he played, right? He was always told, you're too small, you're never going to go, you're never going to make it, was never drafted. He was in the Calgary organization. He was playing in St. John, New Brunswick, and he was like, you know, just there. And then all of a sudden, he goes to Tampa, and boom, it breaks out. He didn't even play junior or major junior, where everybody in Quebec went major junior. He went to Vermont and played collegiate hockey when it wasn't the thing to do for Quebec or Canadian players. So he's very stubborn because he believes in himself. In the first round, he kept saying, I'm not looking for matchups. I just want to roll. I just want to get in the rhythm. And then in game five, and especially game seven, he changed the lines against Tampa Bay. He started to really get into the coaching. But after game one, all he said after the game was, we're fine. Just got to manage the puck a little bit better. We have more room. We got to know how to make plays. It's going to take a little bit of time to go from Tampa to Buffalo. All of it. But he had an opportunity to maybe make some lineup changes. He didn't. Why? Because he almost wants to prove a point. Like, my decisions are good, and we're going to be good. And I think it's going to be the same thing with the lineups and the matchup. He's not going to chase a matchup. He's not going to say, you know, we got to get somebody on Tage Thompson. He's going to let his guys play it out and hope that that makes the Canadiens better. Because that's what he's done all season. You know, when he was criticized, Kirby Doc had a terrible game, couple of turnovers, overtime against Tampa, you know, icing or whatever. Did he take him out of the lineup? No. And he actually put him on the top power play unit to say, like, hey, let's give you more. That's what he does. That's why I don't think he's going to chase anything on the Thompson line.
Well said, and obviously Doc has rewarded the coach with some terrific play, including an incredible rebound
effort,
you know, that that got past Lyon in game one. The Sabres take game one. They are 9-3 in series where they go up 1-0 on home ice, so they'll look to make it a 2-0 series lead tonight and try to keep pace or at least in the conversation with Carolina and Colorado as the best teams in these Stanley Cup playoffs. Last night, once again, Carolina, Freddie Anderson. The win streak is now 7. They're one away from a third conference final appearance in the last 4 years. How did they do it last night in Philadelphia in their 4-1 win?
Well, obviously, Freddie Anderson was huge, but we got, you know, Svechnikov scoring his first goal of the playoffs right now. Jordan Staal, a goal and an assist. He had a power play goal and a beautiful assist on a shorthanded goal by Chatfield. Nick Ehlers now has goals in consecutive games. He hadn't scored in the, you know, in the first round against Ottawa. It waited until game two, and now he's got a goal in game three. When Stankoven, Blake, and Hall were the guys, obviously Freddie Anderson, now Carolina's getting other players to take part. Obviously Slavin getting that one off the goal line was huge. There was a moment in the second period where Philly was maybe thinking at 1-1 to go on a 5-minute major power play. Mm-hmm. No, they ended up getting, you know, just the 2 minutes for Carolina, Taylor Hall, and they ended up giving up a shorthanded goal. So, yeah, this Carolina team is deep. It's not one guy, and they've proven that now.
Staal, Chatfield, Svechnikov, Ehlers with the goals last night. Zegras the only tally for Philadelphia, and the least shiny moment of the playoffs for Dan Vladar.
Yes, Dan Vladar has been really good, but there was some slow movement, some leakage in his game. Even the first goal by Jordan Staal, the puck comes off the back post. He goes back to his back wall. He goes back to his post. He's a little crooked. Ehlers on a breakaway, 3-1. You're thinking, you got to get a save here to stay in the game. Mm-hmm. It's a simple shot over the glove. He just didn't look himself. But he's been great all season long and great in the playoffs, beating Pittsburgh. And still playing well in the first two games of the series. So this is one of those where, well, your goalie can't always bail you out. And he was just average in the game. But Freddie Anderson, we asked Darren Dreger about the Conn Smythe yesterday, and he said Stankoven. And I'm like, yeah, Stankoven. And then last night, I'm like, you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm switching to Freddie Anderson.
It's too easy right now, honestly. You know, and it'll change potentially in the next Colorado game, especially if they get a road win like Carolina did last night. Like, if they're up 3-0 on Minnesota, that just, you know, it should put them in even bolder letters, if that's possible, based on the regular season that they had. But everybody was fearful, like, okay, they're great, but how are they going to navigate getting out of the Central when you have teams like Dallas and Minnesota head-to-head during the regular season? So obviously Colorado was able to get past the Kings quickly. They seem to have the same energy, but it's a hard, hard, hard series, and it'll be really challenging, I think, for them to get the third game based on the fact that they currently lead 2-0 tonight. The other game, obviously, is Game 3 in Anaheim, as the Knights and the Ducks are in an even series so far.
Yeah, and obviously, look, the Golden Knights, John Tortorella, their defensive structure, they've been able to play well defensively and not give up a ton in this series against Anaheim. Utah was able to break through a little bit in the first round, but eventually Vegas was much better. Anaheim pushed Vegas in Game 2. They had multiple chances in the first, multiple chances in the second. They should have been up 4-0 at some point, and they weren't. This will be very interesting. How does Vegas respond in Anaheim in Game 3? Obviously, how does Minnesota respond going back home in Game 3 against Colorado?
That will happen eventually, by the way. If you've been wondering where that series went, it's going to be 9 o'clock tomorrow night before they finally take the ice. So another 8 Central start, which is earlier than some we've seen this year. But
like Dallas has been like 8:50, local time.
Wild,
start.
Obviously. Zuccarello wasn't in practice today. And they've had, obviously, with the Eriksson-Ek injury, it's just, you
it's
know,
tough.
Been really, really challenging for them. But
and
anyway,
then maybe to go back to Wallstedt in Game 3 after the Gus Bus was just average in Game 2.
Well, we are not looking at anything being average right now. We're trying to stay on our game before and after every single Sabres postseason game, which tonight happens here at KeyBank Center. We have pregame coverage beginning on MSG and all of our Sabres social platforms at 6:30. So no matter where you are, you can find us for pregame coverage leading into the broadcast on TNT, and then join us immediately following for the latest on the Sabres after Game 2 tonight. Shayna Goldman coming up from The Athletic next.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
About 9 hours from now, somebody's going to walk away with another huge jackpot,
yes,
won from this Sabres game tonight and the 50-50 raffle presented by Northtown Automotive. We're going into Game 2. The raffle, of course, is already available. Buy the tickets now at sabres.com/5050 or scan the QR code on the screen. We've got a guaranteed jackpot of $100,000. And you don't have to be in the arena. You just have to be in New York State, and you can get the tickets now and watch the jackpot build throughout the course of the game before the winning ticket is pulled, and ultimately proceeds from the 50-50 raffle go back into our community through the Sabres Foundation. It is Game 2 tonight. Our favorite guest every week, Shayna Goldman from The Athletic, is with us now. Shayna, if you will...
Before we do hockey, let me just ask Shayna a question.
Oh.
Because, Shayna, I know you have dogs, and last night I was live on TSN Sports Center. My toy poodle was snoring in the corner underneath a chair, and while I'm live on TV, she decided to wake up, walk all the way next to me, and go to a little ankle biter that she is. Did that ever happen to you with your dogs? I know on this show, but when you feel like, you know what, this is serious, and then all of a sudden you have to deal with the dogs.
Oh yeah, all the time. Like, you'll have it where it's complete silence and you know, sometimes you hear them revving up. You hear like the growling, but a lot of the time I call it the alarm bark. And Mika especially, she has a loud, deep bark. She scares a lot of people out of nowhere. And she'll be sleeping like right here, right next to me on the chair. We'll start screaming her head off. But there's like no escaping it, no matter what. Like, even if she's outside, you'll hear it. They are very loud. They are very disruptive because the world revolves around them. It's not us.
No dogs have ever woken during Sabres Live. Could be a content issue for us, or could be they're just well-behaved. Shayna, what I was going to say leading in was, it's been a long time since we heard you say Tajay Thompson.
Yes.
How would you view Tage's game right now and his likely future impact on this series?
I think he's been good so far this postseason, but he hasn't done anything to get those accents, you know, really cemented on his name again. I feel like we need to see a little bit more. And some of it, I think, has to do with the power play here.
Yes.
Because that top unit obviously has not gotten it done enough, but I have seen some positive signs from him. And I think the key with Tage Thompson on the power play is that he has been more willing to carry it in on that top unit, which we're seeing a lot of neutral zone passing, sometimes four or five passes before they even attempt to cross the blue line. And from there, it just gets broken up and they're, you know, sent back to regroup. And I feel like we've seen power play two be a little more willing to either, if they dumped the puck in, they have the retrievers in Benson and Doan to get it back, or they're carrying it in. So on the top unit, I think the fact that we're seeing Thompson be more willing to carry the puck in, and we saw a little bit more later in the series against Boston, we saw a little bit in Game 1, that's a positive sign. But I do think we need to see a little more out of him, especially when it comes to his shot making and maybe being a little bit less predictable on that top unit to bring back the name Tajay Thompson, because it's been a while since we've said it. You're right.
Yeah, Tajay, gotta get going. Now, you mentioned the power play, and look, in Game 1 against Montreal, that top unit was successful about 20% of the time entering the zone. Like, that is a low number, 1 out of 5, right? You're spending too much time going to chase a puck, and they stayed on the ice for a minute and a half. And Ryan McLeod, I feel like, has such a good ability to skate through the neutral zone and to push the defense back and then make a play. Would you entertain, just to maybe get Tage going on the power play because the entries are so bad, say, let's put McLeod on the top unit for that entry boost, and then when they have their confidence, we can go back to put him on the second unit. But would you entertain McLeod on the top unit for that?
I think you can entertain anybody on that top unit because top unit needs a boost. And you look at him specifically, the first power play of the last game, they attempted to regroup 7 different times. And
The third to last attempt was a carry in by McLeod. It failed, but then he came back and did get through, and they sustained pressure for like a second or two there. So that's something. It's better than what it's been. He isn't my first pick, though, honestly. Ooh. I would go for a Benson or Doan first because I think that they – McLeod could help at the dot too, which they do need help with. But I think we see other signs that are missing on that top unit. I think they need players who can retrieve pucks and win those board battles a little bit more and dive behind the net when necessary to keep play alive. And I feel like Benson and Doan are aces at even strength, and they're doing it on that second power play unit a lot. I think that Doan in that net front area is very valuable, and I think the puck moving could be a little bit better on power play one. I want to see a little bit more playmaking. I think they're both up to the task on that. I think Benson might have the edge for me the way he's been passing the puck so far this postseason. But you go to that power play goal in game one, the shift before Byram gets, it leads up to a Byram shot. It's a Doan carrying. It's Doan and Benson battling for control there, and they win the puck battle. It's Benson's playmaking. It's Byram getting the shot, Benson in the net front just being a pest. They cover the puck, offensive zone draw, and then they win the face-off and score from there. Those are the two guys I think would get the bump in my book before McLeod, but I think they can try anything.
When you recently did the piece on, you know, kind of best-case scenario projections, and Doan was one of them, and obviously I was very intrigued by the Hagel, prediction, projection, if you will. When you start a piece like that in your writing, are you already believing in that likely, you know, ending that he could become a Hagel, or are you merely intrigued by some numbers that then, you know, push you deeper into the conversation? And now, because it's been a little bit of time, how much more realistic do you see Doan becoming Hagel possibly in his career?
So sometimes with those stories, you kind of make the connections yourself before you start diving into it, right? And a couple weeks ago, I did it in round one, and it was, you know, Demidov and Kucherov and Carlson and Dreisaitl, and I forget who I did it, the third player.
I read it, trust me, but I've forgotten too, so.
Yeah, it's fine. But so you kind of have those, like, preconceived notions and those ideas because of the stylistic trends. With Doan going into this season, that was a potential, like, could he be a Brandon Hagel light? And it was in my mind. When I did that story, I used Dom Lucian's similarity score. So you put in the player, their age, and you look for players at that age range that have similar numbers. And then you see all these ranges of outcomes and you start kind of putting the pieces together there and see what made them similar. Is it just the size and physical attributes? What about their game stands out? And you kind of see how much within that, right? Like, go through the tracking numbers, go through the tape. Does it all make sense? So with Doan, when Hagel did come up as that, and it kind of like lined up with those preconceived notions, then you have to start diving into it a little bit more to question, like, is this what I was hoping to see, or is this the reality? And I think the way he's played this year, you could say that's the reality, because he's pesky on the forecheck, he's good in transition, and those are two things that I think we knew about Hagel going into Tampa Bay. Like, you go back to when he was with Chicago, and those were two really strong signs, was that he was great at scoring chances off the rush, and he was a very, very, very good forechecker. And we've seen him grown into it even more and become that true top six talent. So with Doan, we knew he had a little bit of that when he was still with the Mammoth, but now you're seeing it a little bit more consistently, and you're seeing that blend of the, you know, potential third line skill that a guy has, plus that top six upside with his passing, with his shot making. But the more he's winning these battles on a nightly basis and the more he's picking pucks off opponents, you're like, the more and more I think you see those timelines and, like, potential outcomes line up.
Now, the Montreal Canadiens side, we have a Sabres poll going on. And, is, you know, which Canadian scares you that could get going? And it's Caulfield, Suzuki, Hudson, Dobesh, others. Some people are saying Slafkovský. Some people are saying Demidov. If you listen to Marty St. Louis, he wasn't down on the team after game one. He actually said, oh, it's going to take us a little time. There's more ice. There's more room to create than we did against Tampa. I didn't think Montreal had a lot of unmanned rushes, although they got a really nice Kirby Doc effort, you know, getting in on what was kind of almost a partial two-on-one breakaway type thing. Do you see Montreal being able to create because the Sabres give him room, Or is it like the Sabres are fine the way they're playing, and what they did against Montreal in game one is going to be what they're going to do for the whole series?
I think it's tough because both teams have to really adapt here, because the Sabres played a team like the Bruins that don't have a ton of foot speed. The, you know, Canadians were the faster team in round one against Tampa Bay, and at times they look like that younger, quicker version of the Lightning, right? And now you're going head-to-head with teams that have much more similar styles and speeds, and, you know, it's going to change it a bit. I thought the Sabres adapted to that better, obviously, but I think that the Canadians have the ability and have the chops to, one, adapt like they did in round one, but two, they have that skill set that they should be able to better match up head-to-head against Buffalo than, say, a Tampa or a Boston did before. So I think we'll see them get better on the fly in this series, and then it's going to be a matter of seeing who then makes the next adjustment. But something I think we have to watch for, and with that poll, Dobish being the last one, is interesting to me. It's how he handles the puck. And I wonder how much he can get plays going in by disrupting the Sabres' forecheck, right? And we've seen this in playoff series past. I think go way back to when Marc-Andre Fleury was with Vegas and they were going up against Minnesota. And I remember in that series, every time the Wild were trying to get to work, and it was the Eriksson-Ek line with Greenway and Foligno, they were the one line that was somewhat successful. But it was Fleury breaking things up and moving the puck out before they could even start getting to work and start battling and grinding it out along the boards. I wonder how much we're going to see that here with Dobish, because if he can start doing that, I think that's going to really work in the Canadiens' favor and give them that spark from the back end. So it's not just players like Dobson having to retrieve pucks the whole time. If he can start that first pass and everyone else can break out from there, I think the Canadiens are going to start playing to their strengths a lot more, and we're going to see more of those rushes.
Well, I think in the first round against Boston, Lindy Ruff mentioned how Jeremy Swayman was playing the puck a couple of times, how they had to find a way to not give him the puck, to put it in other areas, and they were able to solve that. I feel like the forecheck, as you say, is the Sabres' biggest strength in this matchup against Montreal. The fourth line, Kozak, Greenway, Malenstein, I felt were great. Do you believe that it could be a game changer, or is it still going to be your top guys and maybe even the Norris line that's going to be the game changer?
For me, it's the Norris line. They are my X factor in this series, 100%. I think we could see more from that top line, and that would be a difference maker, of course, even if you say the top lines are going to neutralize each other. Because that, I think, is going to be a potential in this series, right? Because we've seen the Suzuki line play well defensively but not do enough offensively. Yeah. So if they can slow down the Tage line, then it's going to come down to the bottom nines. The Canadians have gotten a ton out of their fourth line this postseason. So as much as the Sabres' fourth line could be a strength here, and as well as they played in game one, and, you know, with the possibility of Carrick coming back, I think that's going to unlock them even more. We're still seeing a lot of production out of that Canadians' fourth line. So they might also cancel each other out. So then it's going to come down to that middle six, right? And I don't think we're seeing enough out of Demidov. We didn't see enough out of him in round one. He needs to shoot the puck a little bit more, and they're still figuring it out. Josh Anderson had his moment. Round one, he has to step up here. So that's where that Norris line comes in, and I think becomes the real difference maker of the series.
Across the NHL, Vancouver's still looking for their GM. Reports indicate that could welcome down to Ryan Johnson and Evan Gold now as the two finalists for that. How do you view the Vancouver situation? Who do you think's the favorite there?
You know, the fascinating part is the Jim Rutherford of it all, because when Patrick Alvin departs, you have to wonder how much a new general manager is going to have a say in everything, because this entire time, while you see that whole, like, here's the president of a hockey ops and a general manager working in tandem in Vancouver, and I don't know the inner workings, but it did feel like there was a lot of overreach there. So if Rutherford is actually moving into an advisory role and he's going to take a step back, it opens the door to someone to actually be effective. I think either of the options that you named are just fine. I think it's much more promising than, say, Pierre Dorion, whose name was circling earlier this week. Don't know why teams are all of a sudden looking at general managers that lost their team draft picks, and not just in poor trades, but with outright bad decision-making. So anything's more positive there. I am very curious how this is going to go in Vancouver.
Well, you kind of made that point about GMs that lost their draft picks. Dorion was with the
Senators,
the Donov, and not making sure that the Vegas Golden Knights knew he had a no-trade clause. And obviously, Chyka with Arizona and the prospect. What do you think this Sundin-Chyka duo in Toronto going to look like?
Who's to say? This is... The Maple Leafs are never boring. The Maple Leafs could do literally nothing and have our attention. It's just what they do. Everything affects the Leafs. But now this week has been so wild. I think it's fascinating to go with this front office structure when you look at what a tough time, right? Like, Brad Tree Living did a lot of damage. You have the Austin Matthews situation. Yeah. Like, clock is ticking on their core players, the core that it feels like is shrinking by the day, potentially. And they go with Sundin, who doesn't have a ton of front office experience. And I think that newcomers and fresh ideas are great to have in the NHL. I'm just a little bit surprised they went in that direction in both positions, right? Because John Chayka's expertise, he has one general manager stint, and it didn't really go well in Arizona. And it's tough to know how much of it was because of the ownership situation, right? Because we know that was just a complete disaster there. And I think it would have been tough for any general manager, or how much of it was him. The other question is how much of it, you know, has he learned since then? We don't know. So you're going to find that out on the fly. And now you're having someone higher up who doesn't have the experience to kind of like right the ship if need be. So it's a lot of uncertainty there. And the fact that now they have that first overall pick obviously works in their favor, but they might be without their next two after that. So It blurs the team direction even more, because even if they want to start a rebuild right now, can you feasibly do that without your own first rounder? Sure, you could acquire picks, but if you're trading out players, it's going to most likely to be to playoff and contender teams. Like, they're not going to be as valuable. So I am not sure how this one's going to go. I'm seated. The popcorn's already out after this week alone. I've never seen a press conference like that in my life.
Well, we've got it ready for game two tonight as well. Shanna, thank you so much. As always,
thanks for having me.
Shanna Goldman from The Athletic. And yeah, popcorn and a lot more in the Saberhood tonight. Yes. For the block party. Every home game, of course. Game two is tonight. Don't miss Party in the Plaza starting at 4 and the Canalside Watch Party Zone at 5. And of course, we look forward to seeing all of you in and around the arena tonight. Visit sabres.com/playoffs for more details. And of course, to RSVP today. Birthdays and anniversaries and more coming up.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Team Store, of course, has been crazy busy during this regular season and playoffs, and now you can look to grab playoff merchandise and more also from the comfort of your own home. Buffalo Pro Shop is the brand new online store of the Sabres. You can visit buffaloproshop.com to shop exciting team gear and unique styles as we head into Game 2 tonight. Buffalo and Montreal, 6:30 pregame coverage here on MSG and, of course, our Sabres social channels. It's a Sabres series lead of 1-0 heading into Game 2. Marty, the Twitter poll today, which Canadian worries you the most?
Yeah, and obviously Cole Caulfield, because at any moment Cole Caulfield can break out and score goals. Nick Suzuki right there. We did get Slafkovský in the replies. Demidov in the replies, and we got a lot of none, because maybe wanting the Canadians to not have anybody worry them after game two. So We also got none. We don't want to wake him up.
Nice to not be talking about Sabres at the Worlds, but the Worlds will continue on. And USA, of course, looking for a repeat after last year's winner, with Tage Thompson scoring the golden goal. And Canada and the U.S. have their preliminary rosters out.
Our boy Paul Cotter is on the roster. Duffer, maybe.
No-brainer.
No-brainer. Matthew Tkachuk is there. You got Will Borgen. You got two of your favorite on the roster for Team USA. Maybe I'll get you a Team USA jersey. Team Canada's got some big names as well. Macklin Celebrini is going to be there. John Tavares, Ryan O'Reilly. So a couple of big rosters going over to the Worlds in Switzerland.
There was a Sabre birthday on this day. The late, great Peter McNabb was born on this date in 1952. We lost Peter, one of the great gentlemen of the game and terrific goal scorer, back in 2022. Yep. His last playoff goal as a Buffalo Sabre happened on this date in 1975, part of the Game 6 win against Montreal as the Sabres advanced to the Stanley Cup Final. Jim Lorenz had the game winner, but it's a beautiful tie-in for a beautiful man who is greatly missed in Peter. And, of course, as we showed you in the last couple of days, the May 8th, 1998, Jeff Sanderson overtime winner. So there's some nice history from Buffalo against Montreal on this date.
There's some great history. Game 1, obviously, big, big goal from the Sandman. That guy could fly, Duffer. Jeff Sanderson could absolutely fly on the ice. You remember in his days with the Hartford Whalers and then here in Buffalo. I got to play with him a little bit in Philadelphia as well. In a practice, like, he was so funny because he was such a drill buster.
Yeah.
If he went first in the drill, Lindy was going to have a heart attack because he wouldn't mess up the drill. But he was a fantastic guy. And now his son Jake is a good skater with the Ottawa Senators as well.
Quick shout out to former Sabre Steve Ott and his Springfield team in the AHL.
Oh, yeah.
They completed the biggest upset in Calder Cup history last night. They were 38 points behind Providence in the regular season, yet won the series in four last night. We'll see you tonight at 6:30.